I'm having an eye situation. Just if I blink real hard or weird, just don't think anything of it.
I'm having an eye situation. I got new glasses. Have spikes on them.
Dude, only you would find glasses with spikes. And that is what you get with Hex Rated, ladies and gentlemen, and others.
I put spikes on everything. Yeah. I have spikes on my fucking black jellies.
Yeah, you do. I mean,
if I can get something with spikes on it, I will get it with spikes on it.
I think, you know what would be an amazing, oh shit, this just gave me all kinds of creative ideas for baking. I could make a croissant, but like somehow fashion sugar spikes.
Ooh, delicious.
Stick it on there for decor, but they would be like almond paste sugar flavored.
Well, I'm sure you could get some kind of like cake decorating medium, like chocolate or white chocolate or paste too. Where you just do it like you do like a little Hershey Kiss. You could do some plate sugar, you know, like lay out some and then crack it and have these like jagged broken glass.
That's amazing.
In your croissant.
Let's do it.
I want your danger glass croissant.
Danger baking. Welcome danger to baking. Hex Rated. I am Blackbird.
I'm Scarlett.
And we are going to talk about some witchcraft. But first, any exciting news for you this week? Did you try more acupressure mat time?
No, I'm sorry. I have not. I don't know why I'm apologizing.
Don't apologize to me, lady. It's just...
You know, I haven't.
Well, I was going to talk about it because I didn't do it the whole week of flip-flop. Yeah, so I was going to say I did it, you know, after being off of it for a week. And man, it was amazing. Yeah, it just seemed really intense and back at it, and just really, it was very nice.
Oh, you know what I did though that was coming back to something I hadn't done in a while?
Yes.
Is when I first moved in the house, I had gotten or was gifted a bottle of Lulu Organics hair oil. Ooh. And it's in this beautiful bottle. It's like fucking gorgeous. It's this interesting like 60s psychedelic art. And they're the ones that do, like, the hair powders and talcs and stuff. And it's a little pricey, a bottle of this hair oil. So I'd run out years ago, but it's clary sage and lavender. I use clary sage a lot, like, when we first started doing Uncoven stuff, because I read that it, like, that sniffing it and frankincense together, like, slows down your conscious jibber-jabber critical mind that opens up your more intuitive, autonomal sort of sensory processing. So I've always associated it with that. And so I got a new bottle. I was like, you know what? I'm going to give myself a treat. I've been putting it in my hair, obviously. But then I've also been using it as a bath oil because, you know me, I love to take baths. And I was using House of Wormwood's, one of their oils for a while, and I ran out. Then I was just using plain old, like, a dollop of coconut oil and let it melt in the bath because I take lava hot baths and showers.
Same.
Y'all. So this week I've had baths with that oil, and oh, it just sends you straight into witch space.
I can't even tell you. So this house is, you know, real old, like we've discussed, but the bathtub, I mean, I guess it's made out of cast iron, but the minute you put water in that bathtub, it immediately turns cold. I mean, you can maybe have like a 5 minute bath, 10 minute bath in there where the water is still like hot. And I also, like, lava hot. I need it as hot as possible. There's nothing that keeps this water hot enough. So I literally do not take... I've taken maybe two baths since we've lived in this house, and we've lived here since, what, 2 years now? So it is...
Oh, and that's messed up, because when I did your tarot card reading about getting a new place,
yeah,
the card we got had your literal bathroom on the picture.
Yep.
I'll post a picture of that card, but it was freaky because it ended up looking exactly like your bathroom.
Yeah. Which is just, I mean, yes, I am sad about it, but I also know that it won't be forever. We will eventually get a place that has a kick-ass bathtub that I can take baths in again. I miss it. Because, yes, it does. Like, that is, we were talking a little bit right before we started recording about trance induction and just getting into that headspace. And to me, bath time is always a great place to do that.
Especially for me, because I'm so, like, Aries, Pitta, fire, eat fire, burn things. Doing something with water is, like, the perfect trance induction for me, because it's literally being out of my element in an element that is less natural to me.
I was going to say, I wonder if the reason that I like it so much, too, is that it feels like it is my element. I'm not a water sign or a water person, but, like, I love the sound of fountains. I love, you know, taking baths. And it's not really, it's more like I have a spiritual commonality with it. I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel like it's out of character for me, but it's also just little bit different.
I mean, I'm sure it has to do with being, like, a terrestrial mammal that we like water, because obviously it's like being in the womb.
Right.
And of course we like need to drink a lot of water to live. And I also read somewhere that like a lot of terrestrial mammals are attracted to shiny objects because they think that maybe it's an evolutionary trait, because we're supposed to be, you know, constantly scanning for sources of water. Mm. So something sparkly, like a flowing body of water, is going to catch our attention. And we evolved that way because obviously it's like super advantageous to be able to like spot and notice water when you come across it, because it's a pretty important resource. We're pretty hardwired to want water, to be around water.
That makes sense.
So it might just be an all mammal thing.
What are we talking about today?
Well, I think you kind of got us started off on the right foot when we were talking about danger baking, goth pastries.
What I do.
Because the last time, or the time before last, we talked about the croissants, and I kept trying to ask you questions about sourdough and whatnot, and you kept saying, I'm gonna save that for the sourdough episode. And so I say to you, let us have the sourdough episode.
Let us live the sourdough episode now. I am ready.
Let us invoke and embody the sourdough episode.
Invoke and call in. The sourdough
spirits of yeast in the east, come to us now.
I like it. I love it.
It rhymed. I don't have any more baking rhymes for the other direction.
I was gonna say, sorry. We can probably make some.
South for the mouth that I will put the bread into.
Oh, west for the best tasting, delicious, whole filled sourdough. Anyway, I do not call the four quarters every time I bake. Well, okay, I will give you an intro into how I even started doing this, because honestly, if it hadn't been the prodding of my husband to try, I would have probably left this project in the dust, because I tried to make sourdough, almost 20 years ago. That is sad that I remember exactly where I was living and what I was doing. But yeah, it was a long time ago and it was fine. Followed a really difficult process and the bread was just kind of lackluster. So like I went through this whole process and they really had you feed the yeast with other things besides just air and flour and water. It was like, put some grapes in there. I don't know. It was a weird ass shit. And I just remember like feeding the starter in my fridge with weird shit for like 2 weeks. And then to make the bread out of it, discard part, was just like, bleh. It was just like boring. So I haven't tried it again. Well, when the pandemic hit, we have another friend that my husband works with who was just baking his face off. He is from Argentina, and he makes amazing empanadas, all kinds of other shit. And so he started growing all this shit in his garden and started making sourdough. And so my husband was like, you know, he's doing all this shit, you should try it. So his friend gave me some starter. I was like, well, shit, now I don't have an excuse. I have to try it. Damn it. You know, I wasn't trying to be like shitty about it, but I was like, ugh, it seems so hard. And so
I guess I'll have a good time. Fine.
No. Well, honestly, like I love making bread, but I don't enjoy the buildup. Like, is this going to be really fucking hard? Clearly I have nothing but time, but still, like, is this how I want to spend my otherwise leisurely, you know, laying down time.
Listen, that candy is not going to crush itself, girl.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I actually gave up Candy Crush, but, you know, words with friends. I feel like I'm empowering my mind. I'm not. But right. I was just like, well, shit, I don't have an excuse. He gave me the starter. All right. All right. So we were watching some show on TV. It was the Jon Favreau cooking show, which I like him as a person, but the cooking show was all about he did a movie and learned how to cook. It's good, but I don't know. I have a thing about like stars trying to like, you know, I feel like it's a vehicle, but whatever. He was serious about it. So that was kind of refreshing. Anyway, they have a sourdough episode and there's a guy on the episode. His name is Chad Robertson. I have discussed him here before. He owns Tartine Bakery. Anyway, my husband got the book for me and said, you know, here, you can try this guy that was on the Jon Favreau show.
Make me this bread.
Make me this. Yeah. Subliminal message. Make me the bread. So I read the intro and then the actual main like country loaf sourdough recipe. I must have read it probably 5 or 6 times before I even started, because I just wanted to be like, okay, I would need to be sure. Is this really what I want to do with my life? Because it feels like such a huge commitment. I don't know. Is that crazy? But I thought, well, you know, there's nothing. Sometimes there's nothing to it but to do it, right? So I got all the shit. You don't need a lot of special shit. You need flour, water, salt, air. That's really all you need. But I had my friend's or our friend's starter. But basically, I started making it the first, like the very first run success, which that's not always true in baking. Sometimes, you know, it takes a couple of duds before you get your gem. But these were like excellent right off the top, because it makes 2 loaves in one shot. And these were just delicious. I was so proud. I was like, they look like they're supposed to. They're all holy on the inside. Awesome. So after that first time, well, this was not as kind of like the croissants. This is not as big of a, you know, issue as I thought it was going to be. This is not as contentious or terrifying as I have built it up to be in my mind. And result, delicious bread that you can use in hundreds of ways. So once I got over the, this is going to be too hard, this is going to be, you know, weird, whatever, then it was like fun. Then it was like, well, how do we improve on an already amazing process? Now, that's not to say there was like the next time didn't come out as good, but there were reasons why. So, but once I was able to know enough to analyze what I had changed in the process, then I started knowing what process worked every single time. And that is the process I have been doing for almost a year now, almost every weekend. So that's my intro.
I'm very scared of doing anything with yeast. Like, explain to me what yeast is and what is the sourdough starter?
You are fun times. I cannot explain to you what yeast is. What my friend gave me is basically a mix of water and flour and air that has been fermenting for a while, either in his fridge or out on his counter. And if you were to...
So it has something alive in it.
Yes, the cultures from the bacteria in the air. Sounds gross, right? But what you would do, like if I had made my own starter, here is Tartine's method for doing that. And I'm not going to get this 100% right, so please don't quote the book back to me. But I'm going to give you the gist. You take a dish or a bowl or a jar and you add about 100 grams of flour mix, which is all-purpose flour and wheat flour mixed equally together. So 100 grams of flour, 100 grams of water at about, I would say, anywhere from 75 to 80 degrees. And you mix it up and then you leave it. Like, I put cheesecloth over the top of a little plastic Tupperware with this mixture in it. And then you leave it out on your counter or in a cupboard, or you leave it somewhere where it's going to react with the air. And then every night you feed it again. You take off a little bit of the, I think they said like take most of it out, dump it, leave like a tablespoon or two of the original, and then you do it all over again every night. So that's one method. And that is
so
it's
like a gremlin.
Yeah, it just like grows at night. And it does. You can watch it puff up, you know, it'll rise and then it'll deflate back down. And those have names. And I was not prepared to give you the name of the stages, but yes, it's like in like...
It cannot be spoken. No. It shall not be named.
No, I could go get the book, but it's like...
No, I'll just pretend that it's too eldritch for my human ears to hear.
Yeah, right? I'm just speaking in like weird parcel tongue or whatever. But yeah, no, it's... So I did that method for probably, I would say 3 or 4 months. So that is your starter. That becomes your starter. So once you've created this little, and I could have just started that without my friends, but like you could just do the same thing without anybody's, you know, extra shit. Just make your own starter. Like it just might take a little bit longer for it to develop. So that is one way to do it. The other way, which I have kind of switched to, I don't feed it every night now, and I leave it in the refrigerator. So I feed it whenever I'm about to bake. So it stays in the refrigerator, and usually I'm baking almost every weekend. Right now it's a little bit less. At least every 2 weeks, I take it out of the fridge. I scrape a whole bunch of it out, like more than half usually. I leave about, I don't know, like it's in one of those square Ziploc Tupperwares. So I remove probably 2/3 of it, and then I add, you know, whatever amount I want to do, usually just like a little. You don't need a whole lot. You could even do like, you know, 25 grams of each thing. You don't need a whole lot of it because when you start your bread process, you're only going to use a very small amount of that. I usually have a pretty decent amount in case I want to do something besides bread, because you can also make pizza dough, you know, whatever with it. It's just like having the whole trick about it is it's not as fast acting as a instant yeast packet. Like I have no doubt you could make sourdough. I mean, then it wouldn't be called sourdough. You can make bread with instant yeast, but this is not that. This is a natural yeast that takes a long time to develop. So I think that's the pro, basically. Like, it definitely gives, like, your starter will start being, like, it'll smell a certain way. It'll be really tangy and sour, just like, hence the name. I mean, just like when you bite into the bread, you can taste that tang. And that's because of, you know, how your starter is developing. But okay, so right now, like I said, I keep it in the fridge. I take it out like a couple of nights before I'm gonna bake, and I usually bake on a Saturday, or no, I bake on a Sunday. So I'll take it out like Thursday or Friday night and feed it a little bit of bread or a little bit of flour mix and a little bit of water, and just mix it up and put it back in the fridge. And so then, okay, so now do we want to go to process? So you have this starter. It's hanging out in your fridge. And then when you feed it the night before you're going to bake, you don't take it out or anything. You just leave it in the fridge. And then when you're the day before you are going to make the dough, you take a little bit of the starter and then you mix it up with more flour mix and water. So now you're making a super starter, except it's called for everyone that cannot see our faces, Scarlett is making a like wow face.
I'm making the emoji face of whoa
super starter. It's really called a levain or levain in French. So this this is going to be like your basic, this will be your yeast that you will add to your dough. So you're using you're basically like using a live culture to make more live culture. Kind of like the way to make yogurt is to start with fucking yogurt. Using that as like your starter is like super active, and now you're gonna add more activity with the leaven. So this is like specific measurements for your bread. So, or
I don't even know these grams measurements that well, you're doing
anyway.
Well,
that's the thing. So that was another thing is
I don't weigh shit.
I had to buy a scale.
I just eyeball it.
No, well, then you will not be making sourdough then. I mean, you could try.
I'm gonna be eating your sourdough.
That's true. I will keep shipping it to you. But yeah, you really want to measure, and you really want to measure in grams, because basically cups are subjective, you know, based on how full you fill a cup up. Grams are better for baking, I find, for results in general, which I was never really... I didn't really give a shit until I started making the bread. But now that I bake a lot of things using that scale, it's way easier, way better. Now I'm like trying to convert other recipes to grams just because I'm so used to using grams now. But all that being said, so you make this leaven, which is just a little bit. It's like 2 tablespoons of your starter and then more of the flour mix and more warm water. And you stir that shit up real good. And it's kind of like the consistency of like a grainy pudding. It's kind of
delicious.
Yum. It feels like the very first time I made it, I was like, this is too thick. This is never going to be. What is this? Like, this is wrong. This is incorrect. Also, I promise to all of you listeners out there, we're going to get to the witchy part of this.
Well, I have a witchy question right actually.
Ask me.
So the one time I've experimented with making something fermented from scratch was when I made that kaikion, which is fermented barley water. And I will say that it freaked me out greatly because the idea of purposely cultivating bacteria in something that you are then going to consume is very stressful. Also, I have like a poor sense of smell. I have a very acute sense of taste, but my nose doesn't work so great. So they kept saying, you know, like, oh, smell it. And it was really freaking me out. And just the idea that, like, there's bacteria ready to, like, bloom all over the air in my kitchen under the right conditions is kind of terrifying. And that it's alive, like, that just sounds weird. And
but what if it was, like, what if you treated it as, like, part of your housewife system, you know, part of.
But then I think that that would make it worse because I'm a vegetarian. So the actual like food safety element was very freaky to me, but also like the magic of this chemistry of like invisible elements coming together and like was so fascinating. And one of the things I wrote in the different kaikion recipes I tried that I did feel like the version that used a fermented barley water felt super magical.
Right.
Like, I really felt like I was brewing up a potion. And I think that element of fear, being a little freaked out, like, definitely contributed to the end result feeling super cool and a little dangerous.
Yeah.
Ooh, this might give my tummy a grumble. Like, who knows? It is very easy to personify the starter, and you talk about I feed it. I mean, that sounds like it's a living thing and that you are responsible for
it. I named
it. This routine.
And a lot of people
a lot of people
name theirs. Yeah.
How is that different or interesting or witchier than just like a conventional
open a packet
bread starter?
Yeast or,
yeah.
Well, right. Well, it's something you're creating out of nothing. Basically, like, to me, that's the witchy part, is that, like you said, all of these things come together in this crazy scientific chemical reaction. But I mean, you're starting with really mundane, basic ingredients that historically people have had access to or have had the knowledge for a long, 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 long time. That is also drawing on the mystical, magical aspects of this, because you are stepping back. Without modern technique, you are using something that is ages old.
That can be done by hand.
Yes.
Can be done without electricity.
Yep. Like if I had a fire pit out back, right, I could bake it theoretically.
I mean, germ theory is only a few hundred years old.
Right.
So keep in mind, like, this process was completely mysterious and magical up until the modern era because they didn't know that bacteria existed. It really was something coming up out of nothing. These two inert ingredients seemingly activated from the air which they just thought was empty.
Right. Not empty. Full of living things. So, yeah, like, to me, just the fact of, like, feeding it, taking care of this other living organism is very magical, especially when, you know, we're so... And I think even gardening has helped with this, not to get off on a little tangent, but, like, attributing personalities or aspects of plants, of food, of things you create with your hands, like, this is all part of a magical experience. Rather than just, you know, and again, I don't grow all my own food. I buy plenty of shit at the store. It's not, but, like, to treat things that I am trying to cultivate with my own two hands or my own knowledge, that is separate and different and reverent and almost, you know, sacred. So that's kind of, once I got it down, that was kind of my process with the bread, is that it seems to be just making it as a spell in and of itself.
Would you say that it's deepened your appreciation of, like, when you buy store-bought or restaurant-bought?
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, kind of more cognizant of just the things I'm buying. Like, am I buying a lot of processed shit? Not as much, for sure. And just knowing, too, that my husband is not like, this bread is crap. I want a store loaf. I want a loaf of Wonder Bread. You know, just knowing that that is not his feeling, like, it's exciting to me that it is enjoyable for him, but I would be remiss if I did not mention that he has been my bread coach through this whole, like, everything I have made in the last year. He has stood by and been like, okay, well, maybe this step you could do this, or, you know, okay, this is the point of time where you do this. And I'm not saying I, you know, have to have him standing next to me helping me, but man, it sure does make it easier if I'm worried about misreading something or missing a step or burning myself because I don't have the right gloves, because we'll get to that in a sec. But, you know, it's nice to have, I don't want to say an assistant, but it's nice to have somebody that really gives a fuck about your process and how you're going to do it and what the result is going to be, not just because they want a good end result, but because they care about you and how much you really care about the process and making it good. Suffice it to say, bread is magic. The leaven. So you make this and now you let that sit. Now you can do two things. I have recently discovered a shortcut, but it's not really a shortcut. I was letting the leaven. So you let the leaven sit out overnight to kind of do its magical gathering together. Cause it'll rise. It's just like a super starter, right? So it'll rise and fall, just like what
you said, magic, the gathering, and I just imagine it playing, like, yes, magic cards.
Yes, it's
at night with, like, pots and pans,
like microscopic magic cards. They're having a
whole, oh man, I wonder what color cards it your leaven plays with.
I don't know, but they're having a whole,
I feel like,
convention.
Black and red, probably. Maybe. Black and red
deck. I don't know shit about Magic the Gathering except watching a documentary on it, and it was fascinating. I had no idea there was, like, national and international competitions for Magic the Gathering, which, fucking A, man. That's,
I probably would have been pretty good at it because I could be a frag doll, because people expect girls not to know how to play. Because right. My crazy ex-boyfriend found a bunch of his cards when his parents moved, and so he taught me to play. And then he was, like, getting really into it again and, like, reading all these blogs about, like, game theory and, like, card statistics, yeah, and cataloging all the rarity of the cards and whatnot and all these, like, chain combos you can do. And he just gave me, like, a pre-bought, because the whole point of Magic is building,
right,
the deck.
Yeah.
Like, so he just gave me, like, a prefab one, which is, like, total nub street.
Yeah.
And I was destroying his entire ass.
Yeah, like, with all his special cards and everything, just, like,
having never played it, not researching it. And then he got really mad, yeah, and this is one of many reasons why he's my crazy ex-boyfriend, but he was like, no, you have to, like, buy a deck. Like, you got to build one. I was like, no, I don't.
I'll just play with this
but
one.
But he was just so mad that I was like,
I'm winning without your special shit, so.
I'm just better than you.
Suck it.
Black and blue fairy deck. Yeah, play it all day.
Do it. Do it.
Sorry.
No, it's good.
Now we're talking about a different kind of magic. That Join is, us next week for
Magic the Gathering.
For Scarlet's Nerd magic. Corner.
That's okay. I like Nerd Corner. Yeah, and I'll just talk about Arkham Horror for a solid hour. Okay, Levin. You're letting it sit, possibly overnight.
It's out overnight, playing cards.
But sometimes, so what seems to work better, because here's, okay, this is also going to blow your mind. Magic times. It was about to happen. Once the Levin finishes its card playing process, like, it should float in water. This is your test. It is called the...
That means it's a witch.
Yes.
That's what I learned from Monty Python. Exactly. If it floats in water...
It's a witch. But right, it's supposed to float. It's called the float test. If it doesn't float, you can probably still make bread, but it's probably not going to have, get ready, oven spring. It's probably not going to have that. Whatever. You just want it to float. I have not baked bread. I have not baked bread without the float thing happening. So I don't want to know what happens if it doesn't float. Fuck that. We're making it float every time. If it floats your boat, you're ready to bake bread. So... What I had been doing, like, this past winter when it was a little chillier, I mean, and by chilly, I mean 55 fucking degrees, but it's not, like, it's not cold here. But it's cold for little card playing Levin, so it would not be ready, like, by the time I would wake up the next morning. It had sat out all night, and it was still not floating, so I'd have to put it in the oven. Not on, but put it in the oven with a bowl of boiling water. Like, boil some water in your tea kettle, put it in a bowl, stick it in the oven with the Levin Tupperware with the top off. And so it can get some heat to it because it needs that heat to activate it. So basically it was too
cold. Yeah, that topless Levin.
You know.
Getting steamy.
So what I've started doing, and it's been warmer now, so maybe it would work, but I was still having trouble. Like, I was having to wait like another 4 or 5 hours that next day for it to float. I was like, this is taking too long, and this is not what the book says. This is pissing me off. So if I start it in the morning and then put it in that oven with the steamy bowl, if I do that right away in the morning, it usually takes about 3 hours and then it's ready. Then it floats. And that's easier than, like, putting it out overnight and then wondering if it's going to be ready or not by the morning. If you do this, you know, just do the oven trick and it's ready.
I just imagine your two black cats kneading the dough in the dark of the night. Yeah. Being like, we're helping.
No, oh God. No, I have to put it in, like, so in the kitchen I can keep it on the counter next to the stove. They don't ever, well, I'm sure they do go on the counter, but I have never seen them in this one area that has my mixer and shit in it. And then if I have to put it in the living, I know this sounds gross, I'm gonna put it in my living room. The heater is a wall heater, so I will put it on top of a bookshelf in the living room, covered in a towel. That seems to be working.
I just want to write a little children's book about two little black kitties
helping make bread.
Making bread at night, and they have like a little magical witch bakery.
I would buy that book 100%. So now you have your congratulations. You have completed step 100. You have not even made dough yet. So now your Levin is ready. You have taken a little spoonful out and have floated it in some water, and you are super happy at this point. Now you take like a certain amount of grams of the Levin, add 100 grams of wheat flour and 900 grams of all-purpose flour to 200 grams of Levin, and then you add 700 grams of water that is about 75 degrees. You do that. You do all that. Then you mix it up with your hand. You get your hand all in there and you mix it all around. And it's like, I pre-make my dough, like bread mix. So the wheat and the white flour, I mix it together in a bag ahead of time. Then you mix it with your hands. It takes about, I don't know, it's pretty sticky. Takes like 5 or 7 minutes to get it good and together. And when you're mixing it with your hand, what you're trying to attempt is to get rid of all visible signs of flour specks. So you want to mix it by hand until you don't see any white flour specs at all. So that takes some work, and it is stiff, so you're really, the mixing takes a bit. And you don't, like, I think there are people that put it in a mixer and do it this way. I do not. I do it with my hands, just like he says in the book. So then you let that sit. That may, it'll make two batches, basically. So I have two round, big proof Tupperwares, and I measure the ingredients into both, and then you let it sit for half an hour, just like that. Then in half an hour, you're going to add salt and a little more water. So, and then you squish it around with your hands, because the salt and the little bit of water make it real, almost like smooth. It's still a thick consistency. It is definitely not water or soupy. It is, I'm trying to think of something I could compare it to.
Mayonnaise?
No.
It's
thicker than mayonnaise.
Is it thicker than...
Here, I like this.
Pudding?
Yeah, it's a little thicker than... It's like if you had...
Is it thicker than flan?
Yeah, and it's different than flan. It's a... Yeah, it would be more like if you had really, really thick cake batter almost. Like, I don't know. That's not a great comparison.
Like wet clay?
Yeah, okay. Yes. And almost like a little bit more liquid than wet clay. But yes, it's squishy like wet clay. That's a good one. But yes, like wet clay, and you're kind of squishing it with your hands, and that part's fun. And and as soon as you've got it, like, you've got all the salt and the extra water, and the water you're putting in is not very much. It's like another 50 grams of water, which is not much compared to 700. Most of the water's already in there. But it just makes it loose enough.
Well, a gram is literally a cubic centimeter of water.
There you go. Did you just learn that?
No, I knew that from eighth grade.
Well, well done remembering things from eighth grade. But yeah, so then it's kind of squishy, and then once you've mixed that up thoroughly, then you are done for a whole half an hour. After a half an hour, you are going to what they call turn the dough. And what that means is, it's not the glamorous shit you think, but what you're going to do is you're going to, and I'm going to try to explain with my mouth instead of my hands, because that's apparently difficult for me, so... If you need to jump.
I already told you once with my mouth.
Let's see what happens. You reach your hand. Do you see me reaching my hand?
Yes.
Into the bucket. You pull from the bottom.
It's in a bucket?
Yeah, it's in like a dough proofing bucket, which is.
Oh, wow. You skipped that there's like a special bucket.
Sorry. I thought I mentioned it, but yes. Well, there.
Okay, so then a walrus is going to make an appearance in this children's book. He's going to supply the bucket.
Okay.
Because walruses love buckets.
It's not, I like this. I like
I'm
that.
Thinking of like a bucket like at the beach or like a pail.
It's, I mean, it's bigger than that, but it's smaller than a Home Depot bucket. It is, I want to say it's a 2-quart bucket, but they're clear. I mean, so you can see your dough. They're called proofing.
Does it have a handle?
It has little handles on the top. You reach your hand into the bottom of the bucket and you pull the dough up from the bottom and fold it in like over on itself. So it's kind of like a gloopy mess the first couple times you do this. I mean, it has structure. It's not like you're putting your hand in stew or something, but it's kind of like, well, it definitely firms up as it continues fermenting.
Like Silly Putty?
Yeah, a little like Silly Putty. Probably a little less...
Like Play-Doh?
Well, like bread dough. I mean... literally like... Whatever, you do that 4 times.
So, you put your hand in it and it feels like dough, because it's dough.
It's dough, yeah. Anyway, you pull it up on each... I mean, I know it's a round vessel that it's in, but you're going to do it... You're going to turn it in quarter turns. And do that motion, the folding motion. Pull it up from the bottom, fold it over. Then you let it sit for another half an hour. You do it 4 times total, every half an hour. And your total rising time, this rise, which is called the bulk fermentation, is 3 hours. You let it rise for 3 hours, and you do 4 turns within those 3 hours. Cool. At that point, your dough is ready for the next step. Are you ready for the next step?
It's not baking yet, is it?
Not yet.
Uh-oh.
That's not until the next day.
Oh, no.
It's fine. This is all Saturday work.
Kitties are going to be up all
they
night.
Are going to be up all night. Well, after...
A little pause.
After the 3 hours, you remove your dough from the bucket. And this is done by just, like, taking a scraper and kind of letting the... I kind of just now hold the bucket over the board. Why are you laughing? I don't understand.
I'm just picturing two little kittens with this dough, but it's in, like... just a plastic beach bucket.
They don't help.
And that's what I'm gonna draw.
Man.
It's gonna be like a cookbook with the recipes, but each step is gonna be illustrated by the cats. And it's gonna be completely ridiculous and not make any sense.
It's gonna be an instant classic. Instant classic.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's so cute.
I like it. I want you to draw this, and if you don't, I'm gonna be mad. So... But I enjoy that it has brought you this much delight.
Welcome to the illustrious club of every art teacher I've ever had.
Right?
If you don't draw this, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, well, it's just an idea in my head, motherfucker.
I'm lazy and afraid of my own success. Sorry. Sorry, here we all are.
I was going to say, sorry to disappoint, but get used to it. All right, well, back to the cats kneading the dough. So... the cat removes the dough from the bucket with its little paw. But you can also just hold the bucket like...
But when it leans over into the bucket, its little chef's hat falls off.
That too. He has to turn the bucket over with his two front paws. And then the other cat tips the bucket on its end so that the dough will come out. They work as a team. This is not... That's not what happens at all. You release the dough from the buckets.
You release it.
Release it. Yeah.
You unleash the dough.
Unleash the dough from all realms and dimensions. It will then fall upon your cutting board or whatever you use for your dough receptacle area that you will now shape the dough on. The bucket provides you with two loaves of bread. Cut the dough in half, unceremoniously, or ceremoniously if you want. But you cut the dough in half, and then you make a series of... This is going to be really hard to explain. You basically like have a dough scraper in your hand, and you drag it around the bottom of the loaf to form like a round shape. Basically kind of turning it with the dough scraper until it forms a certain kind of element of surface tension. You're trying to shape it in kind of a ball, but it's kind of still loose and not really wanting to go into a tight ball just yet. So what you're trying to do is just get it in as much of a ball shape as possible. So
as you're doing this, it's changing texture.
Yes.
So like you're causing some kind of reaction with the gluten.
Exactly.
So you're not just shaping it like, oh, I want to make this wet piece of clay be pot-shaped. There's a tension between the agitating and the shaping.
Yes.
Okay.
And the board. Like, you're basically using...
Ooh.
Yeah, you're using the tools that you have available to create that surface tension. When it comes right out of the bucket and you do this the first time, it's not going to be that great. Just because of the nature of the dough. Like, it's not ready to create that tight ball yet. It needs to sit. So you get it into, like, a loose, like, initial shape. And then you throw a towel over it and let it sit for about 25, 30 minutes. Now it's doing some more magical reactions. Go.
I have a question.
Yes.
When you have to throw the towel on the dough for like 30 minutes or so, do you imagine that it's taking a nap or that it's been bad and you're putting it in timeout?
I like the nap. It's never bad. It's always good. And then the cats magically breathe on it a little. They whisper.
The cats go into timeout.
The cats go into timeout after they have whispered magical words to the little dough bundles. Anyway, after 30 minutes, you remove the towel, and now you are ready to, like, do a for real shape. This involves a series of folds. Are you ready for the series of folds to be described to you? You take this, like, loose ball that you have kind of formed, and now you pull at it from the bottom part of the ball, and kind of like you're putting like two little feet on it almost. You take your thumbs and you pull at the bottom, and then you're going to lift that up over the top of the ball. So it's almost like you're pulling from the bottom over the top of it.
So you're giving it like a wedgie or something.
Yeah,
kind of. Like you're pulling its underpants over its head.
Yes, perfect. Yes.
Or like you're in a hockey fight and you're pulling his sweater over his head.
Perfect.
So you can punch him.
Also great. Okay. Yes. That is.
I'm here with the similes.
Yes, man. I don't know. This would be a real boring ass shit without you because you're doing great. So now you're going to do the same thing, but on the sides. You're going to take the sides, fold them over each other. It's like you're folding a little package. And then for the final fold, you take the top and fold it down under the bottom. And now you do the same thing that you did earlier where you're trying to shape it in a ball with your dough scraper. You're kind of just like holding it with one hand, but turning it with your scraper hand. And it will form a finally, I mean, if you've done all these other steps right, it will form a tight but still slightly tacky ball. It's not the smooth finish dough ball that you get with like yeast package yeast breads. Go.
I too am tight yet tacky.
Same.
That's my whole aesthetic.
Yeah. Sometimes I am a puddle of dough, but most of the time tight and tacky. At that point, you have now shaped a loaf of sourdough bread. You will put flour inside a thing called a banneton, not to be confused with Benetton, the perfume of the late 80s, also a clothing line. But
yes.
Yes.
United Colors of Benetton.
All the time.
And very colorful, but generally extremely boring.
And also very baggy. I mean, I guess that was the aesthetic, but yeah. I enjoyed the perfume though.
We should do an 80s perfume episode.
Oh, I could talk to you all day about whatever that fucking one from Liz Claiborne was.
We should do a perfume episode because perfume is super magical.
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
I'm on it. Okay. Sorry. Ball. Banneton.
The Banneton.
Yeah, you put a shit ton of, and they suggest rice flour, and I use rice flour because rice flour doesn't necessarily, have the heaviness that all-purpose flour has, so it's a little lighter.
Well, it's not gluten, right?
Exactly. So you put a shit ton of that inside your banneton, and I haven't described a banneton yet, but it is a round basket that has, it's made with like coiling wood. I would love to tell you it's like balsa wood, but that is probably not correct. It's probably some other kind of wood, but it's like coiled wood, and it will make a pattern on your loaf of dough, but either way you want to flour the shit out of it or else your dough is not coming out of that thing at all. Anyway, you toss your dough in there upside down. You've taken your little ball and you drop the the top part into the bowl first, so like it's upside down in the bowl. You cover the wood bowl and you put it in the fridge. Now you could let it rise on the counter at this point. I can't remember what the time frame is because I always do the overnight rise. So you just put it in the fridge, let it sit all night. Then you are ready to bake the next morning. Finally baking. Yes.
I looked up Benetons and they are usually made of wicker or straw.
Yes. Excellent. In the morning, you are now ready to bake your bread after a long, long time. But once, you know, if you really start doing it like I did, it just becomes like, you know what you're doing Friday, you know what you're doing Saturday, and you know you'll have bread on Sunday. And I make 4 loaves at a time. Now, you can just make 2, but why not make so many breads that you don't know what to do with? Because I usually end up giving 1 or 2 away, but lately we've just been hoarding them all ourselves in the freezer. The loaves are still chilling in the fridge at this point. But you put your oven at 500 degrees. It's a hot-ass oven. And you let it heat up to...
Wait, you said 500?
Yes, ma'am.
Fahrenheit.
Yeah. It's hot.
That's real hot.
Yeah, it's hot.
Wow. I didn't even know ovens got that hot.
It's really fucking hot. So best in what he recommends in the book and what I immediately did was buy a thing called a combo cooker. This thing is made by Lodge Cast Iron. I 100% support Cast Iron. I wasn't really a fan until this last year, which I have realized is an error of judgment in my personality, because Cast Iron is the shit. I had one that was my grandmother's or something. I didn't take care of it. I didn't season it. I let it rust. So once you realize that, like, hey, it's not that hard to fucking season a pan, and it makes such a huge difference in the way you cook, just fucking bite the bullet and take care of that pan, because it'll last you your entire life, and it's going to be the best pan and most versatile pan you've ever had. So I am.
You could straight murder someone with it.
That too. Like, it's heavy as fuck. And these combi cookers, let me explain to you what this is. It is a shallow skillet on the bottom with a handle, and then like a Dutch oven top that's, you know, probably I would say a good 5 or 6 inches deep. So, and it also has a handle, so you could use them separately or use them together. So for the bread, when you're ready to bake, after your oven has heated to 500 plus another 20 minutes on top of that, you take your bread out of the fridge. We bought a pizza peel to put it on. So you flour the shit out of the pizza peel. You turn the banneton over upside down, and the bread should, if it's not stuck to the fucking basket, should fall out on your pizza peel. And hopefully it has a nice, like, ringed pattern on it, which is great. You can flour the top or not. Sometimes your decorations are a little prettier if you flour the top. You don't really need to add any decorations, but the one thing you do need to do is score it. And this is done with something called a lame, which is basically a razor blade. Now, scoring is definitely easier on cold dough, so that is why I always do the overnight refrigerator thing. And you can take your razor blade and just drag it down the center, and you want to kind of angle it about, I would say, like 45 degrees in your dough. And you don't want to drag the back of the razor blade in it, just the tip. I'm a child. Just the tip. Just score it. And when it's cold, the blade can go real fast. Like, it's fine. And it doesn't, like, catch or whatever. Because that's part of the problem with dough, that you've just risen and it's been room temperature. Like, the blade will catch. And I'm not that great. I mean, I've only been doing this a year. It takes probably, you know, I don't know how many years for people to get really, really fucking good at scoring. But it's good enough if the dough's cold. So once you score it, you can make a pattern on it or whatever. I usually do like a little leaf pattern. Then you slide it off the pizza peel. Oh, important point. You want to let the combo cooker heat up in the oven the whole time you're heating it. So those Dutch ovens are hot as fuck when you take them out. So you take them out, take the combi cooker out, take the lid off, stand back because steam will come up, because that's why you want this combi cooker, is you want to have the steam invigorate the bread so that it rises. Does that make sense? Yes. So now you slide the dough off the pizza peel. It goes into the bottom skillet part. You want to kind of aim toward the edge so it like doesn't like get fucked up in the centering of the skillet. Then you put the lid back on, and you're doing all of that part with gloves because your Dutch oven is very hot. So you put that back on, and then you put it in the oven. You bake it for 20 minutes with the top on. Then you remove the top part of the Dutch oven, and you turn the heat down to 450, and you bake for another 24 minutes. And then you have delicious bread.
Then you can eat it!
The end! You do probably want to wait about half an hour for it to cool.
Not me.
You don't have to. But it is fucking hot. And so, oh, the best part, here's another magical part, is when it comes out of the oven and you put it on the rack to cool, you want to sit it upright. I don't know why, but you do. I'm sure somebody can tell me why. But you put it kind of upright to cool, and it makes like a crackling sound. It's so cool. I know, she's making her...
So wait, like, you tilt it? Is it, like, sitting up like a little people?
Yes. So that's bread, man. Holy shit. It's a really involved process. So here's the magic part for me. It's an involved process until it becomes... I don't want to say rote because it's definitely more to me more spiritual than something that's rote until you like you have that muscle memory after making it every weekend for 6 months. Like you have that muscle memory now, you know your timing. And of course I set a timer still. I can't innately tell when half an hour has gone by. You know what the dough is supposed to look like and you know when something's off. So when it's cloudy and rainy here, which it is today, of course, since I just bought a fancy chair to sit outside in, it's fucking raining. But when it rains, the dough definitely changes consistency. It's more soupy. It's less stretchy. And, you know, I've heard all my life that the barometer, bleh, and but I guess there's some shit to that. That is true. Gluten does not
barometer
like it's something not real. So it's a really involved process until it's not, until you just like kind of know what you're doing and you're like, oh well, now's the part where this happens. Now I know we talked a little bit before on another episode about like, well, you know, what if you have to go away? Well, there are points in the process where you can clearly like leave, but only for 30 fucking minutes, you know? And honestly, I have had a couple of variations where I've like had to be away or whatever, couldn't like complete it in the time. And it kind of just depends. You can let it rise for longer than 3 hours, but your results are probably not going to be as good. So, you know, you can fudge with the times a little, your results aren't as good. So that's my process. And so I was trying to work on a stencil that would be like a sigil, but I'm,
ooh.
Yeah, you'd have to make the stencil out of, you have to make it out of something that'll, you know, lay on a curved surface flat. So maybe out of some like really thin type of plastic or something. There's a chick in Arizona that makes stencils, but I don't think you can commission a stencil. And I mean, I could probably just figure it out if I tried, but I'd like to have a pattern on my loaves that is meaningful to me. Because usually when I bake pies, when you know, in the bottom of a crust where you poke it to, you know, not make it puff up, I usually use my sigil in the bottom of the crust. Like every single pie I make has
sigil in
it. Yeah. So I want to do the same thing with the bread, but I haven't figured out a way to score it yet that would indicate that for me. I mean, just the leaf pattern is pretty common. So that's not, to me, that's not where I am infusing. I mean, I'm infusing magic throughout the whole process, let's be real, but I think having a sigil on it would really, it would make me happy anyway, so.
It makes me happy to think about it.
Well, you have eaten this bread. What was your...
It's, oh my gosh, it was so good. So I got this whole loaf of bread, and of course it's like got that like great sourdough crust on the outside, and it's chewy, and I was like, this is going to take me a long time to get through. And it did not, because I had just plain bread. I made some toast. I put some guacamole on it, like the millennial that I am.
That's literally my favorite. On it. That's my favorite.
I put jam on it. Yeah. It was so good.
Were you able to use it in a, because I kind of wanted you all to try to use it in a ritual, but I don't know if you did. Maybe.
Yes. Well, when we first, the first few bites, I had to restrain myself and I was like, no, I'm going to make the first cut. And so, yeah, we saved it and used the first like few pieces. Great. And, you know, I put some on my altar and nice. That went outside after. So, yeah.
Aww.
So the first ceremonial cut, like we waited.
Oh, so. That gives me a little tear. Yay.
Well, can I take you over to etymology corner for a second?
Fuck yeah. Take me.
So your French word levain is from the Latin levo, meaning I raise, which if you speak Spanish, like levantar,
yep.
Is to raise, to go up. So it's basically a leavening agent is something that causes it to rise. And I was like, what about like the geographical area of the Middle East called the Levant? Mm-hmm. Is that related? Well, it's not bread related. But it is rising related because it's called the Levant because from the Western Mediterranean, that is the direction in which the sun rises, the east.
Wow. Amazing. I like all that because that introduces another element to baking, just thinking about the origin of the words used and just to recreate a thing that is centuries and centuries old. I think there's something really powerful in that and honoring that tradition.
The Neolithic period starts usually roughly like 12,000 years ago, 10,000 BC. And that's usually when you have widespread sedentary settlements year-round and you have agriculture, starting with grains and some fruits. But they're finding more evidence now of people semi-domesticating cereals, so taking wild grains and harvesting them. So they weren't deliberately planting them in road fields, but they were using grains and grinding them and making bread-type substances from earlier than we originally thought. But it's a big switchover in the history of cultural anthropology and paleontology and everything else, of going from a hunter-gatherer society to one that makes use of domesticated flora and fauna.
Right.
I mean, it just changed global culture worldwide.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
The patterns of people's days, because as you just described, bread making is extremely labor intensive, and obviously farming a grain or a cereal grain is extremely labor intensive.
Right.
So just the way that we structure our days and our leisure time is very different than hunter-gatherer societies.
I'll say this, and I will take this on. If you have questions about this process, I mean, yes, I'm sure you also have criticisms if you do this for, you know, either your living or your hobby. It's okay.
But why don't you stuff your criticisms and send us your bread?
Yeah, you can do that. Or just like if you have...
Just send us your bread and show us. Just show us how much better you are. That would really put us in our place if you sent us some good bread.
Send us some bread and we'll tell you if we think it's good.
And we'll shut up while we stuff it in our face.
No, but if you have questions about any part of this process, either, you know, magical or non-magical, please reach out to us either through our email, which is hexratedpodcast@gmail.com, or Instagram, we are hexratedwitches, or Facebook. There is a page for Hexrated. We also have a private Facebook group called The Uncoven, which is super fun. Lots of great ideas and back and forth in that group. So be sure to join if you have not joined that. We rarely mention it on the podcast, but I am going to start mentioning. We pay for everything ourselves. Our hosting, everything is paid for by us, but we do have a Patreon page. You can search for us. We are Hexrated Witches on Patreon, and we only have one tier, and it's $1 a month. So if you can give us one of your dollars, we will gladly put that back into the podcast, and we are trying to generate some more content for you upcoming, so please stay tuned on the new happenings with that. But we're just so happy that you're here to listen, and it's been really good for me to talk about my bread journey.
Well, thanks for telling me about it.
Well, thanks.
It makes my memories of eating your bread that much more delicious.
Well, thanks for coming in hot with the similes and metaphors, because I am real not great at describing textures and feelings, and you know, I didn't even get into like how things look, although that is a thing, like, but mostly, and I think this is also really witchy too, it's mostly sensory, like with your hands. For anybody that can't see me right now, I'm holding up all my fingers and doing some kind of jazz hand situation. But yeah, so on that note, till next time,
hocus pocus, bitches.